5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How's it going, everybody? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn for another Packers podcast, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, jsonline.com. It's a Football Friday, Bob. Third preseason game. How are we doing today?
Good. It's about 9 o'clock, 9 a.m., 10 hours before kickoff. We're sitting here on a beautiful August morning.
Yes, yes.
So we got a lot to talk about today, right, Ty?
We do. I mean, I think today we'll probably get into, we had a great story today on Derek Sherrod. Finally got some clarity on everything former first-round pick has been going through. You can also talk about your story on the Packers playing on a football Friday for high school football. The running back situation, Eddie Lacy, James Starks, John Kuhn, we've had some stories on that. We'll get into the no huddle, kind of making a comeback here in Green Bay, trying to get that thing going. They are. And we haven't had a chance to really flash back to 1987, your story last week, kind of the practice scene with Forrest Gregg as opposed to what Mike McCarthy's doing today. So a lot to get into. We'll try to get to some of your questions at the end, and hopefully you can catch this before the Seattle game tonight, which is Friday night. But I think this stuff will be topical enough. It should last, Bob. First things first, Derek Sherrod. He's kind of been a mystery man here in Green Bay. Nobody knows what's been up. Two surgeries. He's been on the sideline, hasn't practiced, pretty much kind of trending toward Justin Harrell territory. And he's taking a beating from fans out there. Can you just kind of tell us how this story came about and how you ended up talking to his family to get the clarity on it?
Well, that's what I sense. Just in my emails, the guy's been, increasingly fans have become impatient. And I just sensed this over the last month or two. And they want him on the field, and they want him now. And now it seems to be, some are pointing a finger at him for not doing what he can, doing all he can during his rehab. And it's been 20 months, and he's collecting money and all this. So I was able to get a hold of his dad, Lewis, a retired Navy air traffic controller in Mississippi. They have four kids in that family, and his older brother, Desmond, who was a tight end in the league for a couple of years, played in the UFL for the Las Vegas Locomotives. He won a Super Bowl ring with the Steelers as a member of their practice squad, and a UFL ring with the Locomotives.
I wonder how many players have done that.
Wow.
If you would have just done your research a little bit more. About
And Derek's an executive in Mobile with Target. It's quite a family, there's no question. And when I reached them, they didn't hesitate. They weren't over the top. They didn't, everything that they discussed was in there. Now, they don't know everything that happened with that surgery because their son and brother, Derek, is a quiet guy.
Right.
And whether the Packers have asked him not to be intentionally vague, who knows? But that's the way Derek has handled the media consistently for almost 2 years, his whole career. And so in these discussions, they talked about the ordeal he's had, and it's been a long one, and it's still going on, although the father, Lewis, believes that he's just a couple weeks away.
Well, it was a great story, Bob, and just so much detail that we just didn't know. Nobody knew. The ankle. I mean, can you just kind of talk about what happened here?
I wish I knew more, Tyler. I really wish I knew more. There was a time when the Packer doctors and trainers I mean, we're available to discuss all this stuff, all this confidentiality, you know, whatever. I mean,
well, let's talk about
the
that.
The father and the brother had no hesitation at all about discussing their child and their brother. I mean, I don't know anything about all these federal laws, but I do know teams can discuss their players. And I
don't. Well, that's an interesting topic, interesting debate. I mean, there are some players who will be transparent about their injuries even after the fact. I remember talking to Alex Green over the spring during OTAs, and he just described exactly how bad his knee injury was last year, and he couldn't even walk after some games, and he was popping Advils before night. He couldn't sleep, and it was quite the ordeal. Where at the time, nobody really knows that. He's averaging 3 yards a carry. The running game is kind of running in neutral there. But he talked about it, and I think that providing the details on that kind of gives fans, readers, viewers a better understanding of what a player is going through. I mean, I think a lot of times people watch a game and it's just robots out there playing a game, and they don't understand the injuries that they're experiencing. And it's probably to the player's benefit to open up about this stuff. Yet at the same time, I know that some players despise when other players talk about injuries. They think it's a sign of weakness. What do you make of that? What do you think?
From this club standpoint, there's nothing tactical to withhold any information on Derek Sherrod. I mean, this guy's on the PUP list. He's not ready to play. I mean, all we really wanted to know is what he went through, what the second surgery was, what the first surgery was. All right, when Adrian Clem, a guard for New England, when he was signed here, I believe in 05, Clement had a bunch of major injuries in New England, and basically is a culture there where they strong-arm players not to discuss their injuries with the media. And I think it becomes a cult there, and each player, there's pressure within the ranks. Belichick's been able to engender that in his team. So when Clem got here, I talked to him about it, and he found it so refreshing to be able to discuss whatever happened to him in Green Bay. This is after he'd been there like 6 months. Compared to New England, he said nobody knew what I was going through, and he had some serious stuff, slips my memory now, and he thought it was much easier. Now, all right, the injury information can come from two people, the player or the team, you know. Now, if a player discusses his injury, fans and other teammates might see it as a sign of weakness. They could, all right? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. I think a rational person generally wouldn't, but it could be. And if it comes from the team, it lets the player off the hook,
yeah.
But it explains what's going on. Now, in Sherrod's case, he's just kind of out there hung out to dry here.
Yeah.
He's this guy walking around. He doesn't look injured when he walks, but we can't see what's going on with the training room. So he's just out there. Nobody knows anything. The team won't answer anything. They're intentionally vague. From Thompson to McCarthy, everybody else is off limits, blah, blah, blah. And so this kid is just out there. We just had to find out, and
right.
The dad and the brother they weren't over the top. They were just matter of fact, and they told me what they knew. They don't know everything. They admit it. This is their understanding through Derek. I don't know where they're getting their information. They didn't say, and I didn't ask. But best I could do.
Where does this fear come from? I mean, what would the team, what would the player in general be scared of with saying, man, I went through an ordeal. Here's what happened.
The cult of toughness. Don't talk about your injuries. Perhaps it's that, Tyler. It's also just wanting to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
And NFL teams, by and large, love to be in control of everything.
You're right, though. I mean, he is kind of hanging out to dry. A first-round pick, that expectation is just constantly attached to Derek Sherrod, where I think now people kind of know what he's going through. I mean, there's no guarantee that even if he was healthy that he would be productive. He struggled when he was healthy, but at least now you can kind of tell exactly what he's going through, and it's a serious ordeal. And, you know, after talking to his family, his dad, his brother, teammates, all of that, do we see Derek Sherrod on the field this season with Green Bay?
Well, he's going to be on the PUP list, right, Ty?
Right.
That's 2 weeks from tomorrow. They got to get to their 53. I mean, he hasn't practiced in 20 months. Put on pads, played the game. So he's going to be on the PUP list. That's for 6 games minimum. And then based all we know is what Louis Chiarot, the dad, what he said, and he thinks he's just a few weeks away. The best guess is he plays in 2014. Wouldn't you think so?
I guess Green Bay doesn't have anything to lose in shelving him for another year and seeing if he comes back again. Right. And options are kind of low for both parties here. So yeah. I think that's probably what we're going to end up seeing.
Ty, let me mention one more thing on this. You know, maybe early in my career covering this team, I would question injured players in my mind. But the more I was around the game and just saw what these guys go through and how difficult this is, the military environment in which they participate. And this is not basketball or the NBA where this is a tough life. And fans might laugh about that because how well compensated they are, and they are. But this is day-to-day. This is a grind on your body, mental, physical. And, boy, I really try now not to question anybody's injury as an NFL player. I fight it. And I know players or some fans and readers, I'll hear, you know, the whispers about being a malingerer or being lazy or lacking work ethic. And I really try to fight and stay away from that. And in the Chiarot case, I've had those thoughts, you know, that maybe, but then I just try to dismiss them out of hand and what this guy went through. But we didn't know what he went through.
Didn't know.
There's a silence from the organization. And they care about the player, I assume, but not enough to help the kid out by explaining what he's gone through. Absolutely no strategic advantage for them not to discuss this.
Right.
But instead, they do it. They hide behind this thing. The kid is walking around doing what he can. I believe he's doing absolutely what he can.
Right.
Talking to this parent and the brother, the work ethic. This kid has always had it. And fortunately, those two people were able to talk and share it. And now everybody who follows the Packers knows what this kid's been through. And I'm just applaud them for doing it.
You know what? And I've only been out here for 2+ years, I guess. But I'm really starting to kind of see what you're talking about, where when you're on the outside of the NFL in general, I think it's so easy to fall back on calling a guy lazy, saying this guy lacks work ethic. People have to understand, these players have such a minuscule window to make hay in the NFL. I mean, there isn't a minor league that they can fall back on. There isn't a plan B. You either make it or you don't. The time is so short. These guys play through a lot more than people realize, I think, because they realize that the time to make a little money at this playing this game doesn't last long. I mean, the average career is 3 years. The pressure is so high that you can see on players' faces. I mean, there's so many times where I think a guy in training camp wants to get back out on the field and practice, but it's other people pumping the brakes and slowing them down. And you just nobody really knows exactly kind of the injuries that these players are dealing with.
We just don't know about playing in pain. You know, we played high school football, all right? Mm. We had some problems, all this. We just have no idea.
No.
When it really hit me, I just kind of remember this one. Tom Flynn was a rookie safety in Green Bay in, I believe, 84. I had, I don't know, 8 or 9 picks, tied club record or rookie record, something like that. Pretty decent player. Came out of Pitt, I believe. Okay. Starting free safety immediately. Walked in, started. One day after about 10, 11 games, he showed me his ankle on a Monday. Now, it was about the size of a softball.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it, you know. And he couldn't really move. And there he was playing 6 days later, played the entire game. And I just really, that just left an indelible mark. I couldn't believe. And I know they have fantastic round-the-clock stem and all this, you know, the best treatment technology and money can buy. But still, the guy was playing in pain. Screwed up 6 days later, and he played that full game.
Wow, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something else, and, you know, props to Derek Chiarot's family for shedding some light on this all.
And one more thing I'll just mention, okay? In the 80s and the 70s, Dr. Eugene Bresky, the team physician, the trainer Dominic Gentile, they would talk to me all the time about players' injuries. I mean, there were some secrets, certainly, but there weren't that many. readers knew what these players were going through.
Yeah.
They would explain both of them. They would explain these injuries to me. I learned so much about medicine from these two gentlemen, and I owe them a real eternal debt of gratitude for that. And again, we wouldn't write at all, but I mean, we would explain to the reader, and that reader would know about that Flynn ankle and from Damo, and he would know about the Tim Lewis spinal surgery, the cervical deal from Doc Brusky. All this, it provided the followers of this team with a real feeling for what the guys they follow, what their heroes, what they were going through. And now all that ended when Mike Holmgren came to town and he became Dr. Holmgren, and the medical staff was off limit. To me, I think it's a poor decision. And there are teams in the NFL who allow their trainers and doctors to talk. Well, I wish it was here.
All right, just for a moment then. I agree with everything you just said, but we have to play devil's advocate and look at the other side of things. You know, I'm a big hockey fan. My brother works for the Buffalo Sabres. An injury in hockey, it's an upper body injury or a lower body injury. And beyond that, you hear nothing when a player gets hurt. And part of that is opposing players maybe taking a shot, targeting an injury. Do you think that happens in the NFL? Do you think that that's a reason that detail is kept to a minimum, that teams just don't want the opposition going after an ankle, going after a shoulder, taking a shot here and there? Because in hockey, I mean, it's to the extreme. It's, you know, Bill Belichick's in every organization.
I don't know how many opportunities there are to do this so-called shot at a certain part of the body. Mm-hmm. I really don't know. You got 8 or 9 refs out there at an NFL game. I don't put a whole lot of stock in that.
Okay.
Hockey, you got 4 or 5, you got 6 guys on the ice at a time, 12 players, fewer refs. Maybe there's more mayhem going on. I know I've heard that theory, but I don't really buy it that much.
Okay. Well, there's something to think about. We'll let the readers decide.
Those hockey goons.
Easy.
These are nice guys. It's almost hockey. NFL, man.
It's almost hockey season. It's coming up fast. Training camp. Wow. Buffalo got a little rebuilding project going on with the Sabres. Cool. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what do you want to talk about next, Bob?
I would like to talk about the no huddle.
Okay.
I was educated by your story of 2 days ago. A lot of things that I don't know, but we better start learning about them, as you taught us here the other day, because this is apparently going to be quite a part of this Packer offensive arsenal. What did you learn, Tyler?
Well, I guess we'll find out if it's a big part of the offense, because I remember last summer talking to guys about the same thing. You know, they bring in Jeff Saturday, somebody who played with Peyton Manning in an up-tempo, no-huddle offense. They were hoping that he could kind of get that going. Alex Van Pelt, he was Jim Kelly's backup in Buffalo, running the K-gun. I remember talking to him, and the benefits of that the no-huddle has, there's a ton, but it never got going, and I think it was a lot of different reasons. One being, I don't think the replacement officials necessarily helped in terms of spotting the ball and keeping the tempo up pace. They didn't have a running game. I think you need a running game for an effective no huddle. And like James Jones was saying, one drop, one incomplete pass, a sack, it just disrupts the timing and slows things down and puts you in not advantageous down and distances. So for whatever reason, it was slow. The no huddle never really got going, and those plans from last summer didn't work out. So here they are. They started this back in May, June, into August, running the no-huddle offense. It's something they do after every practice, at the end of every practice. And JerMichael Finley said they hope it's 60% of their offense, which is a lot. They've been watching film of Oregon. Oregon runs, 81, 82 plays a game.
Really?
Under Chip Kelly, they did. And, like, you know, I think that's what Mike McCarthy was getting at there when he said that they want to throw as many punches as they can. The more plays, the better. You have all those horses on offense. Just go, 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 go. But you need the pass and you need the run. Because if you think about it, you get a defense out there in, I don't know, a nickel or dime personnel because they're trying to defend all your receivers. You need a running back that can take advantage of that, yet keep up in your no-huddle pace. They think that they might have that in Eddie Lacy. Somebody who can finally take advantage of a softer front. I mean, gosh, Bobby, the advantages to the no huddle, if they got this going, think about the teams that they have to overcome in the NFC, San Francisco, New York, Atlanta. These teams really rely on multiple pass rushers, depth, cycling guys in the game, keeping fresh legs in the game. You can't do that if you can't substitute, so it would help with that. Aaron Rodgers, if you have a cerebral quarterback, who can take advantage of matchups. It kind of forces the defense to fall back into vanilla looks. They can't disguise things like they want to and take the time that they want to. So it would help there.
All right, now let's go to the downside.
The downside is it doesn't work and you're punting too much. And
yeah, the games are longer.
Games are longer.
And so your defense could theoretically be on the field a larger portion of the game against a team that's running a conventional huddle.
Exactly. And you look at Oregon and, gosh, who are some other teams in the college football? I mean, these teams that do rely on the no huddle exclusively and a fast no huddle at that, the defense has given up a lot of yards. So it does put your defense into tougher situations, that's for sure.
McCarthy would lose his advantage of, his use of personnel groupings on the fly, the substitution so quickly, that confuses defenses by itself. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be there because he'd have the same 11 guys.
That's true. I think that's why Aaron Rodgers, when I talked to him briefly about it in the locker room, that's why he made a point to say, you know, we still want to do two-back stuff with John Coombe, and they still want to have that element of the offense in place. I don't think we're going to see 100% up-tempo, no huddle, but they want it to be a big part of the offense. Will it be? Remains to be seen.
Finley said he was estimating 60%.
Right, unsolicited. That's what he mentioned. Yeah.
We've seen a lot of it the first two games. Yeah.
Four drives, about eight plays a drive. They haven't scored a touchdown, but it's been crisp. I mean, they've been moving up and down the field. And I really think that Finley's onto something when he says that Eddie Lacy is the key, just a back that defenses have to respect. That could be the ultimate advantage for the offense and the no-huddle. You're right. I don't think they can use a lot of different personnel groupings by keeping your same 11 on the field, but the defense can't either. So if you can spread it out with three, four receivers, yet have that 240-pound back to chip away at a front, that gives you options.
So they see Seattle tonight. I haven't even checked the injuries. Is the Seattle defense intact? Other than I know a couple pass rushers. Clemens is still out, right?
Clemens is out. That's right.
Are the secondary intact?
I believe so. I mean, it's going to be a good test. They have probably the best secondary in the NFL.
So you run no huddle, and you got your three wides, let's say, and Finley can either be in line or flexed out. So that gives you a possibility of four in the no huddle. Well, what happens if one of your wideouts just can't beat some wide receiver? Snap after snap. I mean,
right?
You need
guys that are in shape and in tune with everything going on, because you know at Oregon they have those fluky, quirky poster signs, and everybody kind of looks at a picture of whatever they have and react to that.
All right.
I mean, here it's Mike McCarthy sending in the play to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers sending the signals to the receivers. Verbal, nonverbal, and staying on page like that. So you're right, there's a lot that goes into it. But the reason Green Bay could pull it off is, I mean, when you have a great decision maker like Aaron Rodgers, where he's, if you're going fast, going a mile a minute, he's not going to make that costly interception. You might as well go for it.
You know, one thing, I was talking to Tom Silverstein, our colleague, the other day. After a play is done and the whistle blows, I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm writing up as many notes as I can in the next 25 seconds.
Yeah.
So that stuff between plays, I never see. I've never seen it. There's a routine. You watch a play. You look at the replay, perhaps, and then you're writing down as much of it as you can. No huddle. You're going to have to change some habits here, buddy.
And that was the aspect of this whole thing that I didn't understand either. Same thing. You know, we kind of allow ourselves to blink there between plays. And Evan Dietrich Smith, that's what he was saying. He said the key to the no huddle, he believes, is the ref spotting the ball. Because if you look at the substitution rules, the offense is allowed to make a substitution. The defense, I mean, they can do whatever they want, but they're waiting for the offense. So if the offense isn't substituting, they want to go. They want to move fast. And as St. Louis Dietrich Smith was saying, the officials were just taking too long. They kept looking to the Packers sideline for a sub, and Dietrich Smith's like, no, spot the ball. Let's go. He used a few other choice words to articulate his point. But he wants it to move fast. And I think that's key, is cutting that time down. I mean, this is unofficial, but just watching that last game, that first drive, had it in the story here. It was something like, I don't know, of real time, 20 to 25 seconds in between plays, which is pretty good. But you can definitely see a lag there where things were moving a little slower than they'd like. And we'll see, because if you're playing a San Francisco, a really good defense, and it's not working, and you can't get first downs, and you can't put those together, I think they'd scrap it. And that's what Josh Sitton said. Look, it's when it wasn't working early on last year, like anything, if it's not working, you get gun shy, you don't go back to it. So we'll see. If it's successful early, it could be a big part of the offense.
And your defense, if you're 3-and-out, no huddle, boy, your defense just got no break at all, right? Man.
That's true.
They're just back on out there again.
That's true. It's going to be interesting, Bob, because I think we don't really know what the identity of the offense in general is going to be yet. I mean, the past couple years, it's been so pass-heavy, so centric to the quarterback. But I'm sure we'll get into this later. There was a director of personnel talking to him the other day. He said, look, I see Eddie Lacy, I see DeJuan Harris, two running backs that can really wear out a defense, but I don't know if they're going to be committed to it. Are they going to stick with the run and really wear out a defense? That would kind of be an identity tweak, something that Mike McCarthy really hasn't embraced. So maybe we see tonight against Seattle some signs for the season. It should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, starters are going to play probably into the third quarter, huh?
Well, you would think so, but it sounds like he really wants to get a look at Graham Harrell and Vince Young and some of these backups. Mike McCarthy wasn't happy after the last practice.
No, he was burned, wasn't he?
He was fuming. So, we'll find out. We'll find out soon. You know, I think it's a good time to kind of transition into those running backs. I mean, that's really been a storyline to watch all training camp long, Bob. I mean, we've written a lot about these guys. What do you make of this group? I mean, I think at the start of training camp, we didn't really know much about Eddie Lacy, Jonathan Franklin. DeJuan Harris was dealing with his injury. James Starks looked good. Alex Green looked pretty good. Here we are, three practices left, two games left, and then at San Francisco. What's going on at running back?
So Lacy's going to be their guy. He can't carry the load. He didn't carry it at Alabama, and he's just not going to be a number one 30-carry guy, at least not right now. He's been terrific. The question is, he's been hurt in this camp, right? He's had a hamstring. I guess that was his only injury. But it cost him a week, something like that.
Right, just about.
All right, can he stay healthy? He couldn't at Alabama. He couldn't in high school. He hasn't in this training camp. He's hell on wheels when he's been on the field.
Well said.
Nothing more to say about that. Yeah. So he's their guy. You see it like that?
I do. I mean, I know that they've said multiple times that DeJuan Harris is the starter right now. He finished last season as the starter, and I think it's going to be a 1-2 punch one way or another between those two guys. But, I mean, Eddie Lacy, what people are saying around the league, what they're saying here in Green Bay is he's going to be the guy. But when it comes down to it and they need to hand the ball off to somebody and get somebody into a rhythm, I'll never forget at the Combine, Mike McCarthy said something off to the side of the – I'm paraphrasing. They'd like to get – a back going. They'd like to lean on a back, get him some carries, let him get into a flow. They never really had that last year.
No.
Injuries and rotations. They didn't have somebody that they could give the ball to consistently for 15, 16 carries. And I don't think Lacy can handle 30 carries a game like some of these backs in the league. But out of anybody, he's the one that could handle a rhythm, a high volume.
DeJuan Harris, we saw him so little last year. What, five games?
Yeah, it wasn't much.
I can't hardly even remember this guy and how tough he was and slamming it in there every time and being hard to see. But I just can't really remember him. We haven't seen him run anything in pads, I guess, the other day, but there was no real hitting.
Well, it depends what people are listening to this. I mean, the Seattle game should be interesting for him.
Absolutely. I want to see Harris tonight,
Totally agree. And you had a great story on Jonathan Franklin, who – coming out of the draft, I think a lot of people viewed as the better running back between him and Lacy. Somebody who's highly productive at UCLA, durable, no injury concerns, just hasn't really wowed in training camp. You know, early on, when the pads first came on and shells, boy, he looked good. He had burst. I remember a couple of those runs he got around the edge and had that second gear. But since then, just hasn't really stood out, I guess, like some of these other backs have.
Yeah, I don't know. Has he had no holes or can he find the hole? I'm not sure. I don't know, but the average has been bad in the scrimmage in the two games. Scout the other day just said he's not playing like he did at UCLA, in his opinion. And it's a different level of competition. I don't know. He's played small, as the scout mm-hmm. said, and he's not playing fast. I'm not writing him off by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he's a good kid with a big work ethic, and he's been productive as heck in the Pac-10. There's no reason to write him off.
Right.
But it hasn't been there in the first month.
Yeah. I mean, it's still very early, and who knows? Maybe if he picks it up in pass protection, he is that third down back, because offensively, at some point, if you're in a third down situation, you can do a lot more with a Jonathan Franklin than a John Kuhn in terms of that player doing more than just picking up a linebacker. Yeah. So in that sense, he could be that player. But you compare him to Dwan Harris, two players of similar stature, and pound for pound, boy, Dwan Harris just packs a lot more punch, doesn't he? He runs harder, a little more decisive. I think that he maximizes each carry more than Franklin has.
Boy, I never thought of that comparison. You are dead right.
Yeah, thanks. It's interesting. And then you got James Starks and Alex Green. I think a lot of people would look at that as a toss-up. I don't know. I guess if they can trade one of these guys, they will.
Heck yeah.
Do you think they can get anything for him? We had this talk, the other day in our office there.
With their injury history, they'd do well to get anything for either one, I think. It's just, you know, everybody just waits and waits. They just hope, they just feel the team's going to cut a player, you know. Unless some team suffers a real injury or two at running back, it's going to be difficult to trade them.
How do you think they've looked in training camp?
I think Starks has been fine. I really do. I don't Green, I think he's been a lot better than last year. I certainly do. Another year away from the knee. Starks, I like Starks.
I mean, that's the thing. They both have looked good.
He's a big guy, 6'2". That's a bit of a problem. I don't think he's developed in pass protection or as a receiver. That's James. And does he help in special teams at all, Starks?
No.
No, he doesn't. Does Green on special teams?
A little bit, he has.
We've never seen Starks really cover a kick, punt or kick, right? Mm-hmm. No. That's a problem.
There was. They both have had about four or five runs, though, where you look at it and that's – it stands out. Green, that's a different running back than what we saw last year. And then you see James Starks have that run, and say, that's the guy from 2010. So there's the signs that both of those players could serve a role in this offense, and you never know what can happen. I mean, look at all the injuries they had at running back last year, picking up guys off the streets left and right. So one of them will probably stick, right? Green or Starks. As some type of insurance.
As the number four?
Right.
So you would, what percent do you give Franklin to be on the 53?
80%. He's a fourth round pick. Would they really give up on him at this point?
80% you give it, huh?
Yeah. Spitballing here, bud.
I don't know.
What do you think? You think he's in jeopardy? Is Jonathan Franklin in jeopardy of being cut?
We don't think he's going to return punts, right? He hasn't looked good back.
No.
Is he going to be a kickoff returner?
Doesn't really. He strikes me more as a lateral type of returner and a guy who dances and isn't as decisive as a Jeremy Ross and some of the other guys I've had back there. I mean, you wrote in your story, it's almost like they kind of put him back there to see if he can help them out in another way on this 53. So, I don't know. What do you think?
He's got a shot on kickoffs. Right now, he would need a lot of work on punts. I don't think they can do that right now. I don't know. Just want to see more on Franklin. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they do too. He's got to get looks tonight in the second half, extensive looks against a good defense.
If I'm Green Bay, I maybe give Eddie Lacy a carry or two. You know what you have. You know, he's been so banged up. While we're talking about Eddie Lacy, the hand injury, you had the recent story about that. I mean, we've written about the toe fusion surgery and how underneath the toenail that was fused and that scared teams off, that's a whole other story. I mean, it wasn't the whole toe. Like, it wasn't all iced and fused together. But in addition to that, he's had all these other things, and one of them being the hand.
So, Tyler, we discussed injuries with Tom Flynn and all this stuff. You know, this just dovetails into this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you believe this? The guy's playing Western Carolina last year. He breaks the fourth metacarpal on his left hand. Okay, the left hand, the thing you fend off, you stiff arm, you know, you take all the blows with your non-ball hand, right? All right, so he's practicing on Tuesday, 3 days later with his big Q-tip device on the thing, padded up. And no surgery right away. They're going to play with the thing. Can you imagine? So he goes and plays a couple games. Then he has surgery 2.5 weeks later after the SEC title game. And whenever they resume practice for Notre Dame, 8-10 days later, there he is practicing, playing.
Yeah.
Shrugs it off. Doesn't think he did anything when I ask him about it. I mean, come on.
There's a toughness to Eddie Lacy. And this offseason, he admitted that in his meetings with teams, some of them kind of did question his love of the game. How much does this guy love football? And I think we talked about that on one of our podcasts here. But this director of personnel told me, look, he's just a quiet, confident kid, and that during their interview with him at the Combine, they actually wanted him to talk more about himself. He just wouldn't talk about himself. He goes out there between the lines. He turns it on off the field. He turns it off, and that's Eddie Lacy for you. Bob,
yeah.
Let's get into your high school story that was in the paper today. People out of state might not be able to relate to it as well, but Friday night football is Friday night football. Tonight, the Packers, I guess, are the biggest show in town, even though all these preps games are going on. Why is this a big deal?
There's 211 high school games being played in the state of Wisconsin this weekend. I think it's 9 on Thursday, 183 on Friday, and 11 on Saturday. And of those 183 today, 176 are kicking off at 7, the same as Seattle Green Bay. I mean, it's an institution. It's a tradition. It's Friday Night Lights in the state of Wisconsin. Now, this isn't a huge high school football sports state. Mm-hmm. Let's be real, right? It's not Texas or Florida or Oklahoma or some of that stuff. But it's big enough, and it's the biggest game in town in Sparta, Wisconsin Rapids, Flambeau, Superior. I mean, this is it, you know, all around this state. This game tonight, the Packers had no choice. CBS, it's their weekend to have a game. They want this thing on Friday night. They see Green Bay, Seattle supposed to play, and they play the darn thing.
They had no say in that, then?
I believe they didn't.
Mark Murphy can't
no.
step up and say.
I think those networks, they don't pay billions of dollars for these rights for nothing. Hmm. And when their people come to town for interviews on Friday before regular season games, and they want to talk to so-and-so and Matthews, Rogers, they have to do it. Networks ask, these teams jump. They have full control. They paid billions for it. Same with this high school or this exhibition schedule. All right. I'll just review. You know, the Packers had 3 of their games on their statewide network. I guess it goes to Iowa and Upper Michigan as well. It's not a pure statewide. But when Mark Murphy and the Packers have a home game and it's on your state, they can set the date and the time however they wish. All right. And they've been sensitive to the Packers in the past. Now, they weren't 2 years ago in 2011. The preps now are playing 2 games before school starts. And in this case, it was August 19th on a Friday night, 2011, and the Packers elected to play Arizona at 7 o'clock on a Friday night. The Packers took some heat for it, and rightly so. It's not a good decision. They should be more sensitive to this high school culture. Bob Harlan, when he was running the show, he made the mistake twice that he later admitted. I believe it was in 02 and 05. He played a game Friday night at 7 in direct conflict with the preps. And then in 06, he had one final chance to rectify it, or at least a chance to rectify it, and he did. And instead of playing Tennessee on Friday at 7, he played Tennessee at Friday at 3. Hmm. Full house, 69,000. Nice. It was a matinee game. I sort of remember it. And Harlan changed that. And, you know, the high school people, think a lot of them for doing so. The high school people would love to have this season start later, all right? But the school year starts in this state, I think, on Tuesday after Labor Day, September 3rd. And I was told part of the reason is that the lobbyists for tourism want that student body workforce, especially in Wisconsin Dells, to be able to work that Labor Day weekend. Huh. I would imagine Is Door that right? County as well and other tourist things around the state. And maybe if school starts the week before, then it's kids wouldn't have those jobs anymore. They wouldn't be able to or whatever. So that's a factor. That hurts attendance. This Packer conflict hurts attendance. And, you know, some high school teams, maybe the great programs that they're having huge crowds, West Appear, Heartland Arrowhead, you know, the stud programs around the state. But the struggling programs, hey, some of their fans who might go and pay $4 or $3, whatever the ticket is tonight, they might just stay on the couch and watch the Packers. They don't all have TiVos and DVRs. And that hurts them. And some people, of course, are going to the Packer game themselves.
And it's the third preseason game. I mean, this is the one exhibition game that actually means something.
Just a little bit. It's a somewhat interesting to see, as opposed to the others are terrible to see.
And I think, you know, one other, if people are listening to this, I guess, out of town or they live in a big city, you have to remember Green Bay is, what, 100,000 people? The stadium holds 80,000?
Right.
It's just a lot of small towns all over the state.
It's a Milwaukee ticket game now, however.
That's a good point.
This is gold package, so most of those fans are coming up here from outstate, southeast Wisconsin, you know.
Now, at the end of the day, Bob, it's up to the person. Do they want to go watch a high school football game? Do they want to watch the Packers? They have to make that educated decision. And TJ Lang, I mean, what he told you in your story, he's like, all right, let's just throw him $1,000. Like, who cares?
TJ's wild, isn't he?
Honest,
he's blunt, a funny, funny guy.
Yeah, he's one of the good ones in there. So, I don't know. I mean, is it a big deal? I mean, what do you say to that when somebody looks at it and says, come on, they're the Packers, they're the NFL, who really cares?
No, I think it is a big deal. I mean, this is the foundation of football. It's the roots of the sport, and I think players are sympathetic to it. I bet the coaches are, because everybody's been in high school sports. Mm-hmm. And to a degree, I believe Mark Murphy in the front office is, they all played high school sports too. Mark said he played Saturday games when he was a kid growing up. Yeah,
didn't
so did
the,
I.
They
I
didn't
had
have
a lot
the lights.
Of Saturdays
didn't have
too.
Lights?
There weren't, yeah. But I think it is a big deal. And
I'm with you. I'm just trying to get you worked up.
Yeah, I just, I mean, I love high school sports, and my kids played them, and I miss watching their games very, very dearly. And it was a great time in my life going to every one of those games. And so I think the Packers should bend over backwards to be sensitive to the preps.
I mean, there's a purity to high school football. I mean, there's just something different about it. And it's almost kind of like that purity is clashing with corporate America, corporate football, and that's just the example of it. They're kind of just meeting head on here, and who do you think is going to win that battle?
The Coaches Association sent a letter to the NFL trying to just say, hey, just no football exhibition on Friday nights to begin with. They never heard nothing back. Dan Brunner, the executive director, the longtime coach at Hartford and St. Francis, said he never heard anything back. I mean, that's typical. They're not going to. That's just the way NFL is.
I mean, all right, so they used to have 6 exhibition games. Is 4 too much?
It's certainly brutal trying to write these games. Talk about contrived stuff. You're just making, you're basically almost making stuff up off of seeing a player, a starter for 2 series, 3, you know? I mean, it's absurd. It's theater of the absurd. It really is. Charging full freight for it. It's ridiculous.
Well, sometimes these exhibition games are an extension of what we're seeing at practice. So, I mean, JerMichael Finley has been a go-to guy in their 11-on-11 drills with those receivers out. He goes out there in the preseason game at St. Louis, has a big night, starts connecting more with Aaron Rodgers. That's a story. Eddie Lacy running the way he did against the Rams. That's a story. So you do see some trends develop, I feel like.
All right. I don't buy a tie.
All right. One more topic, Bob. We didn't get a chance to get into it last week. I think that the story came out after we did our podcast. But, I mean, it might be the best story we've had in the paper this summer. But your comparison between the Packers' reaction, response to a shutout loss under Forrest Gregg, to a shutout loss under Mike McCarthy, two totally different eras of football, was fascinating. You really got to kind of take us into the thinking there and what it was like then. All right, so Forrest Gregg and the Packers, they go down to Madison. They're warming up. He yanks them off the field. They play like garbage. He brings them back to training camp and he just beats the hell out of them, right?
The thing of it was, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm not really watching warm-ups too much from the press box. So I don't think anybody asked Forrest Gregg, why did you pull the entire team, take him off the field during warm-ups? Maybe somebody asked that question. I don't know. I think Forrest volunteered it.
Really?
I believe he did.
Did your teams ever just get kicked out of practice or taken
yeah.
out of the field? We had that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But this was
where the coaches would walk off and say, right. "Here, you know, you fools, do yeah. it yourself."
This is the NFL, though. I mean, just yanked him off the field.
Well, he said the ball was on the ground. They couldn't execute the center snap. They weren't lined up. Can you imagine having a team at that point after? And these training camps were long, so that's after like 5 weeks of work. That's not 2 weeks of work.
Total ineptitude with that team.
Correct. So he was mad, and he went on a post game rant after that, and then he had that team bus all set up, and they drove down to Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. A good hour, I suppose, from Madison. And they went to the Olympia Resort, where Forrest had it all set
Majestic
up.
Olympia. They went.
Nice place.
Yeah.
Now it's still going. And Forrest had this all scoped out. And in that back corner of the property, far removed from the lodge, from the swimming pool, I believe there was, from the golf course. Well, kind of far from the golf course. There was a ski hill back there and some trees and a huge polo field or fields, I don't know. And that's where Forrest practiced for that week. Then they bussed to Green Bay for an exhibition game and bussed back to Oconomowoc for another week. And he was in his glory, no doubt about it. Now, Gary Ellerson, the running back, who had suffered a knee injury, I think a week before that, he didn't get the chance to practice on mm-hmm. the polo fields of Olympia Resort. But Gary brought something up that I had forgotten. He said because of all the horses out there playing on Sunday, the field was all had a bunch of hoof marks all over the place. Do you believe that? And I remember that now.
Do you?
It was beat to heck. And Gary said, yeah, the players were just livid. Now, can you imagine today, guys, today, used to these pristine fields,
yeah.
having to do that 26 years later? It just boggles your mind. It wouldn't happen, man.
All right, so Forrest Gregg takes them back, and they go through all of that. And what happens today with Mike McCarthy when, you know, they weren't as embarrassed as that team was in that game.
No.
Still, though.
No way. The ball skittering on the ground in warm-ups. So McCarthy was very, he was basically the same in his post-game presser, wasn't he?
And they had a couple days off.
Yeah, a couple days off. He came out the next day in shells.
Yeah.
TJ Lang's dressed for practice. Ah, TJ, keep it in, man. We don't need you today. You know, so he wasn't doing any corporal punishment. He blew at practice a couple days later, right?
He did, right?
He really went nuts. Some choice words in front of the crowd out there and the player. He attacked him pretty good. That was a physical practice. There was a blitz drill, I believe, that week, and that was physical, at least by today's standards. High tempo, a lot of running. Don't forget, there was a lot more running in today's practices than there was back in Forrest Gregg's time. There were a lot of standing around back then, Tyler.
Is that right?
A lot of hitting, but a lot of the tempo at practice, if we could go back, completely different.
Oh, that
a lot
surprises
of repeating
me.
Plays, coaches on the middle of the field giving instructions,
mm-hmm.
coaches stopping one-on-ones. I can remember Jerry Wamfler, Charlie Davis, these line coaches, stopping it for 30 seconds to show a teaching point during the one-on-ones. Never goes on now.
Good point.
Bing, 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 snap, 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 all on tape. Then they do their teaching off the tape at night, you know, or in the afternoon.
Right, they do all that stuff off in their meetings today.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Forrest loved his time down there. He always wanted to move training camp. You know, he was basically told that's never going to happen. Brown County needs that tourism. And so he got this little carrot, and he loved the 2 weeks, and then Forrest was gone, and so they never returned. It's a little-known piece of Packer lore that shouldn't be forgotten.
Now, should McCarthy be a little harder on the players? I mean, you saw him at the podium after last practice, and he was not happy with where the team's at energy-wise, a lot of questions out there. And that's after he went in shells for a couple days and then went in pads once. I don't know. I mean, should he be channeling his inner Forrest Gregg to a degree?
Well, my final sentence, I guess that's all I can say. All that remains is the unceasing need to win and the knowledge that there is no best way to do it. Who's to say Forrest Gregg was wrong? He did win a few Super Bowls, like six.
Well, I was going
to. And he coached his way to 1-2. Who's to say Mike McCarthy has all the answers? I'm not going to say it. I don't know.
Okay. All right, guys. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks so much for listening. And all right, how about a little Wallflowers to send you off?